All right. Hello. Welcome in Thursday. Thirsty Thursday for some cannabis. What up, Javi? Javier Haas, Elliot Lane here with Ben Zinga, Cannabis Insider, episode number 1,000,005. I actually have no idea what number episode we're on, but Javi is getting a drink. And while he does that, let's get started, AT.
Boom. Nope. Yep. Maybe.
All right. It's an interesting couple days, y'all. It's been heavy on the public news, public company news this week. Obviously, starting to slow down a little bit legislatively going into the end of July here. But Javi, lots on your mind, man. Tell us what's going on for you.
I got my mind on my money and my money on my mind. No, I'm kidding. I got cannabis talks in my mind today.
Well, Tilray, story of the week, right?
Story of the week. A great week for Tilray, actually, the stock rallying for at least two consecutive days. Today, it's up like 15%. What do you think of the results? Oh,
I mean, there's a few things. They had another good news release, right? Signing on with the distribution company. But they also, their earnings were not as terrible as expected. Right,
not terrible, like, definitely.
Like, you know, they, like
net revenue,
they weren't bad at all.
Basically, you know, same as last year. Which
Well, at worst, it was flat. Like, but their alcohol increased, their distribution was flat year over year, but cannabis was down year over year. Albeit, I'm pretty sure it was up year over year in the same quarter.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to look in there number wise.
You know, here's the thing though. Even like. I like the hedging strategy. I know Tilray catches a lot of crap over their alcohol investments, but I think it's a good hedging strategy.
But like, yeah, is it business flack or is it like, you know, passion of the plant, alcohol is the enemy flack?
Yeah, no, ideological, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying Tilray is like this majestically run unicorn of a business, but that being said, I mean. You know, hedging yourself. I mean, look at what Urban Grow does on the hydroponics and ancillary build outside.
Yeah,
they work in multiple different industries. Trees expanding.
$1 million in yearly revenue is not something to scoff at from alcohol, right?
Not at all.
Whether we like it or not, it's
SNDL. Look at what they did.
Yeah.
I mean, Village Farms, obviously, ideologically, it's not an issue, but they're both in cannabis and produce. And then produce is really what's driving them down. Their cannabis side is growing. Anyway, we're getting off topic here. Tilray having a good week, and I think rightfully so. Alan Brockstein on this one wasn't correct, thinking that their earnings would plummet their stock even further. Could have happened, didn't. It's been a good week for them.
It's hard to predict, right? We got to be fair to cannabis analysts. Like every time I post an article, you know, featuring an analyst, the first thing people say, it's like, because of you, people lost so much money. And it's like, well, not really. You know, it's not the analysts who are responsible for stewarding, you know.
Well, now you see every single note that comes out from an analyst. Piper Sandler did it today with Tilray. Basically, yeah, we like Tilray, but they're neutral. Until anything happens with U.S. regulation. It is always a qualifier in their notes now. U.S. regulation. We're waiting on U.S. regulation to really dive heavy in.
Indeed. Let's move to some fun news.
Ooh, I like fun.
The first video, the KD Trey video. Kevin Durant was talking cannabis. Can we watch the video first?
We invested in a number of cannabis companies.
Yeah.
And I'm so curious about your decision to be public about that, and what the end? Does Adam Silver call you up and say?
No, hey, I actually call him and tell and advocated for him to take marijuana off the banned substance list. I just felt like it was becoming a thing around the country, around the world, that it was the stigma behind it wasn't as negative as it was before. You know, it doesn't affect you in any negative way. So I just felt like it was.
And what did Adam tell you when you said this to him?
He agreed. And you see where we're.
Well, now they've now they've actually told players you can invest and you can smoke and everything else. I think.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can, yeah, definitely marijuana is.
But you were a pioneer, if you will.
I wouldn't call myself a pioneer. Not at all. But
a public pioneer. How about that?
Nope. I wouldn't say that either. but
like, nope.
I just enjoy the plant. I mean, as simple as that. And
What did you tell Adam? How did you persuade him?
Well, he smelled it when I walked in. So I didn't really have to say much. You know what I'm saying? He kind of understood where this was going. And then, I mean, it's the NBA, man. Everybody is like, everybody does it, to be honest. Like, I mean, it's like wine at this point.
I love this, man.
I mean, he had a lot of good points there. Mm-hmm. A lot of good points. I mean, it's like wine at this point for them, but, you know, it's medicinal, it's recreational. I mean, or as Sharon Letts told us last week, I mean, what they use it for could be just considered medicinal.
Yeah.
And at this point, I mean, the NBA for sure is moving in the right direction. Not completely there in allowing active NBA players to fully be involved with marijuana companies, but of course can passively invest. But that being said, can be much more involved in the CBD side. I think that's right. Right, Javi?
Yeah, man. I mean, it still remains to be seen, right? What happens exactly. But what the NBA has been saying is, you know, they're taking a more progressive stance toward it. They're allowing, you know, players, even active players, to consume. They're not testing them. So, you know, a quite progressive stance from the NBA, I got to say.
Yeah, and Heath Koresh, he's not a pioneer, and obviously he doesn't consider himself one. He's just an advocate for use for his particular group. And I think that's okay, right? I think, you know, it's okay to normalize it within a group that you participate in. Anyways, Javi, let's run through a few more story items here, man. What else do you have on the docket today before we get to our awesome guests?
I tried to do this one video just like a few minutes ago. It's pretty cringy, but... it's funny, and instead of just telling you, we'll just show you. Whatever.
This weekend, people at Neptune Beach in Jacksonville, Florida, found a very crazy, unexpected surprise. They found several pounds of marijuana that had washed ashore after the police say a bag broke in the sea, freeing a bunch of weed. However, this marijuana is not safe for consumption, the police said. This did not deter some people at the beach who lamented not getting there before the police to get a little treat to bring back home. Read all about it on Benzinga.com.
And are you going to smoke
sure
that?
To avoid no consuming way. Any cannabis yeah. with fungi as it might affect your health.
There you go.
I mean, there's so many reasons I wouldn't smoke that, but... but like, man, I guess it's funny, you know, I'm sure people are somewhat saying that in jest, but y'all don't smoke weed that washes up on the beach. No, you don't know where that's been. There's no COA on that.
Indeed. Let's do a quick round of more serious news and let's get to our guest. One is out of MasterCard, MA, you know, for those looking to invest. MasterCard is demanding the shutdown of marijuana purchases on its debit cards, which as many of us know is a pretty common practice. Dispensaries and cannabis companies have found several workarounds to be able to process debit cards.
Hold on. I have a very interesting note there. It was a tweet from Livvy McKay. We had her on a couple weeks back. A really, really phenomenal interview from My Tepi. Check them out. But Livvy McKay, not thinking SAFE is going to happen, to say the least. She just doesn't believe it, not a proponent of it. However, she just tweeted, "All right, guys, y'all know I'm a resident curmudgeon on SAFE's chances. However, the types of moves, referencing MasterCard, are worth paying attention to. Why is MasterCard doing this now? Why did Citibank essentially debank Jason Wild? These are moves, not words. Feinstein is now a co-signer. Are the Dems coming around to the notion that only SAFE will pass, but SAFE alone is better than no SAFE at all? Are these moves by the banks trying to apply that pressure? Actions are greater than words."
Very interesting.
Right? I mean, I didn't think about that. I got to give it to Livvy. That made me sit back and go, huh.
There's always two sides to a story. I find this interpretation pretty interesting.
Right? I think so too. I mean, like... It is because you're also seeing like more of these institutions start welcoming TerrAscend into their depths now with their TSX listing. I mean, others pushing back. It's an interesting conversation. Not one we're going to find a solution or answer to on this podcast, but just a couple different storylines for you there. Javi, keep it going though, and then we'll get to our guests.
Love that. Did we shout out Jeff Rogovin already? I don't think we did.
No, we didn't. Shout him out.
So Jeff Rogovin created a company called Buddy Media several years ago. It was later on acquired by Salesforce for $800 million. You know, just chunk change. And he's been working with Philo, which is a data provider for several industries, but with deep roots in cannabis. And he has been now promoted to president. So big shout out to Jeff and our friend Chad there, who, you know, are doing great things. And then out of Portugal, the country decided to decriminalize synthetic drugs, which I think is a great move, man. It's, you know, Portugal has already had programs for harm reduction for a while, and they have proven to be extremely effective. And now they're extending this to synthetic drugs as well.
It was something that, I mean, I don't know if he ran on the decriminalization, but President Biden was running on more safe spaces, you know, for consumption of these types of drugs.
Which we started to see, by the way.
We have, yeah. And then, I mean, it's a whole interesting loophole that we go into there and I'm going to avoid, but I like this as well. I think it definitely is a step forward. All right, Javi, one last story. What are you going to pick?
One last story. Colombia continues to push for adult use legalization. We had a measure that was close to passing a few months ago and failed in the last instance. And now lawmakers are pushing for another round, and they reintroduced the bill, this time with about like 70 something co-sponsors. We'll see. I mean, honestly, it's something that would benefit Colombia greatly, that would help the businesses there who are struggling to find export markets for their medical production, a country that has been ravaged by the war on drugs, and could use a break, and could use the revenue, and could use the you know, presence of the state as a way to curb illicit activity related to substance distribution.
Great. Awesome. Thank you, Javi. Thank you, everybody, so much for tuning in so far. All right, let's get to our guest today. We're going to bring on Nicole and Gabe Mendoza from Forefront Ventures. That's OTC listed FFNTF. They're going to be talking to us a little bit today about operations, about product, about processes. I'm excited to dive into their world and see what they can educate us on. All right, Aaron Thomas, let's bring them on over. Welcome, Gabe and Nicole. How are you?
Great. Happy to be here.
Doing great. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Afternoon for us, morning for you. Appreciate you being here with us. So, Gabe and Nicole, just give us a quick rundown. You all work for, you know, one of the longer standing operators in the space. Can you give us a sense of what you do for them and you know, where you sit in those operations?
Yeah, sure. I'll go first and then I'll pass it off to you, Nicole. I've been with the company now 8 or 9 years. I started in Illinois in 2014, applying for one of the dispensary licenses and cultivation licenses in the medical round. Was fortunate enough to get one of each, then was able to parlay that. We sold a controlling interest to Forefront, and that's where I came on. And at that point, I was, they basically said, hey, look, we need to expand. Are you open to moving and opening these stores and growing this business with us? And I said, yes. And so I moved to the East Coast, and fast forward about a year and a half, I had opened up 14 dispensaries in 7 different states and 3 grows, one in Massachusetts and then one in Illinois. And so it was a blast off right from the beginning. And now I oversee revenue. So essentially the bulk of that is retail and wholesale revenue. And it has been an absolute whirlwind. And I'm happy that the longevity that we're still in this run, because it has been something that has been the best experience of my life.
8 years in the cannabis space feels like 20 years. I think you guys know that. I'm just under a decade in the industry overall, 5 years with Forefront specifically. In my more recent role, I'm heading up product and trade marketing, but I just came out of a 3-year stint with Forefront, developing, managing all of their products. And so have tons of depth of knowledge in all 24 of our brands. Right now, we're in the process of optimizing those lines of business. Similar to Gabe, I joined the team just a little after him. As they were expanding on the East Coast, I was brought on to help open up the 3 stores in Maryland, help acquire the 2 active stores in Massachusetts at the time, 1 in Pennsylvania. So I have tons of experience opening up stores from the ground up. Came back to Illinois. We're now based back in Chicago, our hometown. If you haven't guessed, we are married, and we did meet.
I was so curious.
Yes, I did sell him his first legal 8th of weed when he walked into this company I was working for at the time for a competitor. And it was just before 420, I remember, 2019.
Wow.
So, yeah, well, congratulations, 4 years later.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So I have a quick follow-up and then I'll let Javi dive in. So Nicole, you help develop these products and brands and, you know, the lives that they will have, you know, and Gabe, you're more centric to, you know, getting them out there, you know, and pushing them out, you know, both to consumers as well as to other businesses. One thing I want to ask, you know, since you're both so ingrained in this product side, you know, the stigma out there is really quality of product for MSOs just isn't as good as, you know, craft growers, as OGs, et cetera. Can you give us a sense of, you know, why that may not be the case for you all, like how you all are creating quality products, what you're doing, what's your process to bringing, you know, cannabis to the masses, to the consumers that are looking for good product?
So I want to say that our process has definitely evolved. You know, we're coming into like a maturation phase, like post M&A season for us all, where we went from acquiring, merging, expanding our brands and trying to get them to market as quickly as possible as we went from Washington to Massachusetts, Illinois, Michigan, California, et cetera. And where we're at now is really strategically focusing on evaluating all of our lines of business. We'll call these our products, our brands. We have brands in almost every category: flower, pre-roll, vape, edibles. We do chocolates, gummies, chews, tinctures. So when I say like a robust portfolio, I mean it. You know, the brands were all active at one point. And where we're at today, that's allowing us to zero in on quality, really, and profitability, is we're assessing all these lines of business to see where is there a market fit or not, where's our profit margin, and we're deciding to retire, optimize, if you will. We call it retiring internally because it gives us the opportunity to revive any of these brands at a later date. You know, we're not killing them, although sometimes we do say kill. But we are just focusing on where the money is meeting, where, you know, which products are moving the needle in that market. And I think that that's definitely allowed us, I know, actually I can see in the last like 4 months, it's allowed us to really focus on quality. Without quality, you don't have loyalty. And we're looking for customer loyalty. Mm-hmm. We're looking for loyalty from third-party partners when it comes to wholesale. And so that's a huge reason why we are prioritizing quality. I don't know. I'm going to pause there and let you.
No. I think that you're hitting it on the head. I really think that the most salient point that you said, right, is that this has been absolutely a learning curve for everyone in the space, right? And so our origin story where we got our cultivation chops was from Washington, and it was an extremely competitive marketplace, and you had to be able to understand your cost structure and you had to be able to compete at price. And so we were fortunate in that we had those processes, but what was lacking initially certainly was just, okay, well, how do we put that cost saving measure and the product quality together? And it's taken, and you know, this is a plant, right? So to be able to really get and hone in and understand the different phenotypes that you want to grow and understand the genetics that you bring in. It takes a while. But fortunately now we brought a lot of its genetics, a lot of its understanding the dry cure process, right? No one wakes up and says, I want to smoke shitty weed. No one does that, right? And so it really is, you have to build a brand and you have to build a brand based on high quality products. And in order to do that, you need to get the right genetics and you need to have the right focus. And so I don't know how the other MSOs are doing it, but I know that that was really a commitment from the top down. And once we got that, the sky was the limit.
I got to tell you, I was having a conversation, I think, this weekend, and someone actually told me, I love shitty weed because good weed gets like harder high. And it's like, yeah, well, maybe you can smoke like good weed that just doesn't have so much THC. But you know, having said that, right, I'm thinking about the quality of the weed, and it's related to your last name, Mendoza, right? I'm from Argentina. Mendoza is the region, the province where we produce most of our wine, right? And a few weeks ago, I was interviewing this guy who is a very well-known grower from Colombia, from Black Tuna Seeds. And one of the things he said, Sergio said, cannabis is like wine. It doesn't matter if it's the most expensive or the most affordable. It matters how it makes you feel, what you like or dislike. Do you agree with this in a sense? Do you think that great cannabis can still be affordable? Because on the other hand, we had like Black Cannabis magazine a couple of weeks ago posting, you know, great weed is not cheap. Cheap weed is not great, right? Mm-hmm. So where do you stand in the spectrum?
I think that, you know, for the longest time, and it certainly is a part of our ethos, right? We want the highest quality with that the proper price point. But when you take into account the reality of the costs that it takes to run an effective business, what I think you're going to start to see now in the cannabis industry is a shift from, okay, we are low cost providers to, okay, we need to brand ourselves and create quality products that can maximize that price point, because if not, you're seeing it, right? The capital crunch is ensuring that if you are not a profitable business, you will not stay there. So I think that, again, we were fortunate because we had those cost-cutting measures at our ethos, but you need to have a brand that speaks to a higher price point because of how intense it is with the cost structures that you don't find in any other business.
I want to add a layer to this. So the question or the part of your question that I want to center in on is, do we think that quality weed can be affordable? At Forefront absolutely believes that. Our same growers, you know, that grow our premium brand of weed are the same hands, the same hearts, the same minds that touch our economy line and, you know, our more accessible line, you know, just below that economy line. And so I would say absolutely, we don't cut back on any of our cultivation measures, you know, depending on like the phenotype or the strain. I think that what's really making the price difference for us is that depth of brand story, because that's totally different set of labor hours for the design team, for the creative, for the PR, all of that. And so we're recovering for those cost measures in that premium pricing, you know, and getting that feeling into the buyer of that premium line. But then we're also able to, you know, keep that same keystone pricing for the economy lines that we're bringing to folks. And I want to add one other layer of like how we determine our pricing is just like the difference in harvest time. You know, like people are loving those what are known as like sativa lineage type strains because they have the longer grow times. Well, because that takes more labor, those are going to be more often than not the strains that you find in those premium packaging. Premium branded lines.
And I have one more, you know, like a prompt, you know, based on a comment. And I don't mean to put you in a tough position, because this is a comment from Chris Crane, who is one of the co-founders, former boss at Forefront. But during the last Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference, which, by the way, is coming to your hometown in Chicago, so you better join us. He was talking about the rescheduling of cannabis, and he said that has the potential to be the most consequential action that's come out of DC on the issue of cannabis possibly ever. Do you agree, disagree? Do you think, what is to you the most important or impactful piece of legislation that could come out of DC?
I would agree. And I think that it's a little nuanced, because the way that it gets descheduled is going to be really important, right? I mean, is this going to be a complete descheduling? Is this going to be down to a descheduling where it's now in the hands of pharmaceutical companies? The reality is that the way that that happens is going to be extremely consequential. And with that, does that mean that there's uplisting involved? You know, I think that there is a lot that goes into descheduling that it's similar to SAFE, where it's like, oh, everyone thinks once SAFE is going to solve so many things. Well, the reality is most of us have banks already, right? And so you have to really understand the way in which it gets done in order to understand, well, this could be great or it could be terrible. Are states going to have their own rights? Is it going to be only, you know, is it going to be interstate commerce everywhere? You know, how does that roll out will entail the success or failure of so many.
Love that, man. That was spot on. I put you on the spot there for a second.
Well, the good thing about, I mean, yeah, Chris, I love Chris Crane, so I don't want to say that. And
who doesn't?
He instilled in us, you know, we helped found Chicago Normal. And so we understand the trials and tribulations and the history behind cannabis and what it really means. And so, yes, thank
you. I would say a result of that proximity to, you know, the legislative movement on a state level basis, and because of our rapport with Chris and everything that he's done thus far, and fellow advocates like Chris, is that we're big advocates for like radical incrementalism, you know, like let's for the benefit of all, really like take this piece by piece, you know, not try to take giant bites. And not for the sake of control as much as it is for the sake of transparency and having awareness and alignment, you know, making sure that there's nothing hidden in the fine print, making sure we're fully understanding what the consequences could be of any piece of written law.
Well said. I want to shift this really quickly to wrap up here. I'd like to talk a little bit about your relationship with the consumer and who you're creating products for. So when you create products, you know, are you creating products for the 20% of consumers that are buying 80% of weed? Are you creating products to draw new consumers in? I'm really curious, like, how you look at your consumer and then translate that into a product. Maybe a broad question, but I'd love to hear.
Yeah, I'll take the first swing at that one. I think that this falls in line with where we're at in our life cycle as a company. I think our strategy at first was to bring in as many new customers as possible, which is why we went wide with our line of brands and hitting as many categories as we could. We really were trying to hit 80% of folks. And now I will say that we're transitioning to really focus on those folks that come in for the bare necessities week over week, you know, the flower, the pre-rolls, the vapes. We know that we're leaving out a few folks that are looking for more like maybe innovation, but we do have measures in place. You know, one of them is bringing out a new sub brand called The Hunt, you know, where if you are looking for more innovation when you hit a dispensary, when you're looking for your brands, but you are still at your essence, at your core, a flower consumer, we're quarterly now able to differentiate those very small batch, very limited time, may not see it again because it doesn't have the yields that we need to hit our bottom line, phenos. And so they'll be able to pull those out and understand like, hey, that's where the innovation is coming in. That's where we're leaning into that. And so I hope that that answered your question.
Yeah, no, I think the only thing I'd add is the reality is, yeah, you got to understand your customer base. And it really is that when you start to look at the data, I mean, I've been fortunate enough to be on the retail side to understand the consumer purchases and understand the consumer preferences. You know, when I look at what are the top selling products, you have to take yourself and your ego out of that, right? Because I would not have assumed that a disposable pen called Frye or Good News Brunch was going to be, you know, one of our top selling products. But you have to look into that and say, okay, well, what does that mean about the consumer? Where is the consumer? Are they at the live rosin pen stage yet? or are they still at the disposable pens that have a good feeling, that say fun things, that taste fun ways? And that is an iterative process that has to be done continuously. And you have to take the data from the dispensaries and wholesale partners and funnel that up to people like Nicole so that they understand, okay, well, let me start working on this before that trend goes away, right? And so I'm grateful that we have operations in California and Washington that can tell us ahead of, you know, they're the canary in the coal mine,
yeah,
what is happening and what is going to be moving to the Midwest and then the East Coast. Because it is a very iterative process. You can't just say, hey, we're just going to, these are our products and we're going to run with these till the end of day. You've got to be iterative. And that's really important for us.
I love this, man. Like, thank you so much both for joining us. And by the way, you know, I'm just like, I don't know what's the word, but like hardened. No, I can't find the right word, but it's so, Natalia is my business partner at El Planteo, which is a sister company of Benzinga in Latin America. And you know, people often say, you know, working with your partner is hard. I disagree. But here's one thing that is hard, and it's doing interviews, right? Because many times you know what the other person is going to say, or can kind of predict it or something like that. And the way like you two are looking at each other, like, okay, you know, you go, okay, I'll stop here. It's just so
yes, I mean, the working with your partner might be hard.
Elliot is like, shut up, dude.
I did not say shut up. Please, Gabe. Please, Gabe, keep going.
You know, working with your partner may be hard. When you're in this industry, you're involved 24/7 with it. So
smoke breaks help.
It is very unique, especially to be married, to be Latinos this high in the industry as well. We're just really grateful, and we're not going to mess it up. So
it humanizes.
Thank you guys.
Yeah, of course. Nicole, Gabe, really appreciate you both. It humanizes this industry. It is just people. It's passionate people behind this space, and we appreciate you coming on today, sharing with us your process, and letting us know a little bit more in depth about what 4Front's really about. So appreciate you both. Hopefully we'll talk to you again soon. Hopefully we'll see you in Chicago in a couple months, but until then, we'll see you guys later.
Thanks, Javi. Thanks, Elliot. Take care.
Bye, guys.
Javi, that was fun, man.
Share my love stories.
Absolutely heartwarming. Yeah.
Anti-love.
Not hardened.
Yeah, heartwarming. Thank you, producer Aaron Thomas.
Oh my God, I love you. All right, y'all. BZCannabis.com to come see the most stacked agenda in cannabis, September 27th and 28th. A couple governors, all your tier one, tier two, tier three MSOs. Be there or be square. Benzinga.com/cannabis for all your news throughout the day. Honestly, y'all guys, my favorite way to consume Benzinga news is through the app. Download the Benzinga app. You just, there's a news feed for industries at the top. You scroll over all the way to the right, hit cannabis. It's just cannabis news all day. It's sick. Ooh. It's wonderful. Love that. Javier, always a pleasure, my buddy. Last words to you.
BZCannabis.com. Come join us in Chicago and share the love of this beautiful industry.
Share the love. Peace.